Was dark the void, and still throughout, for nothing is and nothing less. Silence permeates about the boundless, minute emptiness. That silent darkness all before, the march of time is yet begun, unformed, unshaped, and nothing more. Nothing is except for one. This one is God, and here creates the shapes of matter, atoms, earth. With all the darkness saturates the planet's elemental birth. Around the earth but chaos wreathed, the planet scarce restrained in place, though airless, still impatient breathed, though soundless still it howled in space. A windless tempest, throatless roar, a waveless storm of currents deep, without a bound, without a shore, a timeless pause, a restless sleep. Its form in sable waters veiled, unnumbered fathoms dark the sea. To sovereign purpose there assailed, the spirit stirs expectantly. With neither origin nor end, he is and was eternity. Then through the void his word did send the first commandment, let there be light. And darkness split at last, and time began its wheeling course. The void dissolved, the silence passed, his word an overwhelming force. Such as was not there, now it was. Though light was nothing ere he spoke, his word is true in all he does. So light he sang, thus light awoke. In iridescent rays it flew, as breathed from life himself it flared. Resplendent colors kindled through, with beauty fierce and uncompared. The one had made the light, and so it glimmered wholly as it should. From fiercest flame to gentlest glow, it showed his nature. It was good. Then on the untamed luminance his word composed in ordered way, the dark and light divided thence, he called one night, the other day. So evening was and evening passed, morning came and morning went. When evening came again at last, the first created day was spent. Good morning. For those of you who may not know, my name is David. For those of you who absolutely knew that, but maybe didn't remember that, I'm totally with you. One thing I have a really hard time with is remembering names. So here's the solution. When I say three, everyone is going to shout out your name. Ready? One, two, three. All right. More of you did that than I thought were going to. But that's good. I got the rest of your names. I knew you were, I actually have a note here. Who thought they were clever and shouted your name? Yeah, that's right, I read you like a book. So on a completely unrelated note, we're going to talk about chaos and confusion today, and also light and understanding. The last few weeks we've been working through the things Jesus said about himself, specifically the I am statements. We started out with Tom Cates saying how Jesus was in the middle of an exchange with religious leaders, and he said, before Abraham was, I am. And then last time, Leanne introduced us to his statement, I am the bread of life. Today, I'm covering his statement, I am the light of the world. Here's a spoiler, big idea slide. The word of God is the light by which we see the world and understand it. And just as he made the sun and stars to steward physical light, he made us to steward understanding of him, of the world, of each other. That's a lot. We will come back to it. But just keep that in mind as I read from John chapter 1. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was with God in the beginning. Through him all things were made. Without him nothing was made that has been made. In him was life, and that life was the light of all mankind. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. There was a man sent from God whose name was John. He came as a witness to testify concerning that light, so that through him all might believe. He himself was not the light. He came only as a witness to the light. The true light that gives light to everyone was coming into the world. He was in the world, and though the world was made through him, the world did not recognize him. He came to that which was his own, but his own did not receive him. Yet, to all who did receive him, to those who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God. Children born not of natural descent, nor of human decision or a husband's will, but born of God. The Word became flesh and made his dwelling among us. We have seen his glory, the glory of the one and only Son, who came from the Father, full of grace and truth. John testified concerning him. He cried out, saying, "This is the one I spoke about when I said, 'He who comes after me has surpassed me because he was before me.' Out of his fullness we have all received grace in place of grace already given. For the law was given through Moses, grace and truth came through Jesus Christ. No one has ever seen God, but the one and only Son, who is himself God and is in closest relationship with the Father, has made him known." So we're all on the same page. Here's what John means when he starts out by saying the Word. Word, in this case, here's the Greek word, is logos, and it's a term that's translated often as word, of course, speech, principle, or thought. In Greek philosophy, it also referred to a universal divine reason or the mind of God. John is here using it because his readers, who he's writing for, will understand that, what he's referring to. But he goes a step further than simply saying that logos is the mind of God or the reason of God. He's saying the logos is God. Another way of putting it is what God says is who he is. So God made everything through his word. But the first spoken creation that the text refers to is light. And that highlights that the light itself was made literally through his word. So God made the light, and then on the fourth day, so several evenings and mornings after the light itself was created, he then creates the sun, the moon, and the stars. Depending on your translation, in Genesis 1, it says that they were made to govern the light, the night, and the day. Another way to think about it is that they were created to steward the light that was already made. And they bring order to the chaos. It wasn't just darkness that was before the light was made. When the Bible talks about darkness, it's very often talking about this idea of chaos, where there's something that is disordered. It's unmade. It's not made yet. And what God did when he created the light and he created the lights to govern that light was he brought order to that chaos. And that's going to be very important here in a few minutes. So Jesus is the light by which we see and know God himself. And that's what John chapter 1 is talking about. But I want to be very, very careful here. This is not to say that Jesus himself is created. Jesus is God the Son. He is eternal with the Father and with the Spirit. Always has been and always will be. But the created light that's referred to in Genesis chapter 1 is made through the Word, the eternal Word, and that tells us about him just as he reveals God to us. And then there's this person that the Gospel of John refers to, a different John, John the Baptist, who came to testify about the light. And he specifically says he was not the light, but he came to testify about the light. And that is really important because that's much closer to our job. In the same way that the sun and the moon and the stars were made to steward the true light of creation, we are made to steward the light of Jesus and the light of God from him. And Jesus actually says something like that himself. So we're going to read in a minute where he says, I am the light of the world. But in Matthew 5, in the Sermon on the Mount, if you're familiar, he actually says to his disciples, and by extension to us, you are the light of the world. And that's not a contradiction. And what he's trying to say is that the light that he is bringing to us, we then, like the stars, the sun, and the moon, have the opportunity and the responsibility to steward that light for the rest of the world. So with that, let's see what Jesus actually says about himself in John chapter 8. When Jesus spoke again to the people, he said, I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me will never walk in darkness, but will have the light of life. The Pharisees, of course, challenged him. Here you are, appearing as your own witness. Your testimony is not valid. Jesus answered, even if I testify on my own behalf, my testimony is valid, for I know where I came from and where I am going. But you have no idea where I come from or where I am going. You judge by human standards. I pass judgment on no one. But if I do judge, my decisions are true, because I am not alone. I stand with the Father who sent me. In your own law, it is written that the testimony of two witnesses is true. I am the one who testifies for myself. My other witness is the Father who sent me. Then they asked him, where is your Father? You do not know me or my Father, Jesus replied. If you knew me, you would know my Father also. He spoke these words while teaching in the temple courts near the place where the offerings were put. Yet no one seized him because his hour had not yet come. Now, for those of you who are really paying attention, you may recognize that a little bit later on in this same discussion, this same chapter, is where Tom Kay started us, where Jesus in this discussion eventually says, before Abraham was, I am. So he's putting a lot out here. But in this particular spot, he's saying that you don't know the Father. You can't understand the witness. If you knew the Father, if you knew me, you would know the Father. Exactly the same thing that it says in John 1, that Jesus reveals the Father to us. No one has seen God, but Jesus reveals him to us. Of course, Jesus' opponents challenge him, but he knows who he is. No, he can't produce the Father as a witness, and he doesn't have to. And he's making a point here where when he says, even if I testify on my own behalf, what I say is true. Like, he knows he's telling the truth, and really it doesn't matter. But actually, I do have a witness. And to know him, Jesus, is to know the Father. There's this kind of reciprocating witness here. Everything that Jesus reveals, reveals to us who God is. And then, like I pointed out before, he also says that we reveal him to the world. We take his teaching, we take his behavior, hopefully, empowered by the Holy Spirit, and we bring it to the people around us. We reveal, or should reveal, him to the world. We steward his light in the same way that the sun, the moon, and the stars steward the original light of creation. So how do we respond to this? Well, first with gratitude. Start with gratitude. It's very easy to take for granted, to just not think for a long time about what Jesus has actually done for us, what he has revealed to us in himself. And if you are only just coming to the point, or you're not yet at the point where you believe this and can truly be grateful for it, the response is faith. The response is to trust him, to take the revelation that he has made of God and accept that. And then for all of us, it's honesty with ourselves, recognizing where we are, who we are, and what we can and absolutely under any circumstances cannot do on our own. And the more we understand, the more gratitude we have, the more faith we commit, the more trust we put in Jesus, the more we understand him, the more we can help others to understand him as well. Jesus brings the light of God, but the knowledge and understanding, and it's a little trite and tropey maybe, but the idea that Jesus brings the light of knowledge to us is arguably one of the more important things that we often don't think about. So I was thinking about how, what best illustrates this, because over and over he does things and he says things that show this, but there's one particular miracle in Mark chapter 8, which is one of my favorites, that we're going to spend some time in. And it shows how he brings both light, yes, and also understanding to a blind man. Mark 8. Let me set up some context here. So Jesus has just had another tense exchange with some religious leaders, and his disciples are very worried about the fact that they don't have bread, and Jesus says something to them about the leaders, and they completely misunderstand him, because of course they do. The disciples had forgotten to bring bread, except for one loaf they had with them in the boat. Be careful, Jesus warned them. Watch out for the yeast of the Pharisees and that of Herod. They discussed this with one another and said, it's because we have no bread. Aware of their discussion, Jesus asked them, why are you talking about having no bread? Do you still not see or understand? Are your hearts hardened? Do you have eyes but fail to see? Think about that one. And ears but fail to hear? And don't you remember when I broke the 5 loaves for the 5,000, how many basketfuls of pieces did you pick up? 12, they replied. And when I broke the 7 loaves for the 4,000, how many basketfuls of pieces did you pick up? They answered, 7. He said to them, do you still not understand? They came to Bethsaida, and some people brought a blind man and begged Jesus to touch him. He took the blind man by the hand and led him outside the village. When he had spit on the man's eyes and put his hands on him, Jesus asked, do you see anything? He looked up and said, I see people. They look like trees walking around. Once more, Jesus put his hands on the man's eyes. Then his eyes were opened, his sight was restored, and he saw everything clearly. Jesus sent him home saying, don't even go into the village. Okay, a lot here. Like Tom Kaye said a number of times, Jesus does these miracles, and he does very often the same miracles, but he does them in a very different way. We are not going to get in, why did he spit on this guy's eyes? That's something he did that was different than the other things. What we are going to focus on is what I think is a unique occurrence in the Gospels, where it looks like Jesus healed this guy in two stages. And it's very often misunderstood, and understandably so, where it seems almost like Jesus didn't quite finish the job the first time around. He touches him and he says, what do you see? And the guy says, people? Trees? And then Jesus touches him again, and then he can see and understand everything. But I am quite sure it's not because Jesus messed up. I'm positive of that. But actually, in the context, it makes perfect sense what he's doing, because he just got finished talking to his disciples, and they were completely worried about completely the wrong thing and completely misunderstanding what he says. And he says, do you have eyes, but you're not actually seeing what's in front of you? And then he does this miracle in just such this way. The disciples didn't get it. Despite everything they'd seen, they didn't get it. So Jesus heals the man's eyes, but he doesn't understand what he's seeing. Closest frame of reference he can have is, well, trees, maybe. I mean, maybe he's walked into trees, walked through trees. He knows, oh, limbs, I guess. I don't really understand what I'm seeing. This actually is really cool because it reflects modern examples of people who have been healed through surgery. In some occasions, people who are blind most of their life or from birth had a particular blindness that was able to be cured through surgery. And if you go and look up these people's stories, what you'll find out is even though their eyes or the connection between their eyes and their brain was fixed, they can often end up in a very difficult spot for a really long time, even getting very depressed because the world is so different and they don't understand what their brain is suddenly trying to process. A person can be sitting right in front of an orange and not understand what it is until they reach out and touch it. And they're like, oh, that's an orange, because touch is their frame of reference. So when Jesus touches the man and he doesn't understand what he's seeing at first, that's Jesus saying, it's kind of like my disciples, right? They have eyes, but they really don't get what they're looking at. Right, Peter? Nudge. But then he goes the further step. And it's why I like this so much, is because what we take for granted every time Jesus does a miracle everywhere else is people can just see and everyone's happy. People can just dance when they couldn't even walk before and everyone's happy. People can hear when they couldn't before and everyone's happy. And the same thing was happening in all of those miracles. It's just this one Jesus slowed down so that we could see that. He wasn't just healing the physical problem. He was downloading the information. He was bringing the light, not just literal light, but the light of understanding to that person's mind they would not otherwise have had before. So back to our big idea. If I can bring this slide up. The Word of God is the light by which we see the world and understand it. And just as He made the sun and stars to steward physical light, He made us to steward understanding of Him, of the world, and of each other. I'm going to close by sharing something I wrote from the perspective of the man that Jesus healed in Mark 8. I think that this maybe will help bring home this better than me talking a lot longer could. As you listen to this, think on how Jesus has opened your eyes, even if that's just this morning as you've been listening to this, and how He's opened your mind. And also think on how you can bring His light into the eyes and minds of those around you, to steward His light as the sun and stars steward the light of creation. I don't actually see darkness. I'm blind, so most people assume that's what I see, but it's not. How to describe it? Right now, there's a dark background that looks like brick fields with a luminescence front and center. Actually, it's just changed to a different shade. Now it's bright with flecks of something sickly, and there's something that looks like a loud yell threatening to break through and cover everything. If I try to block out all this distraction by closing my eyes, it doesn't work. It never goes away. How to describe it? Chaos. I see chaos. To be honest, whenever others talk about darkness, it sounds nice, actually. Like the eyes version of quiet. I'll never see that. Just unending, distracting chaos. My friends think that might change, though. They're bringing me to see a man about my eyes. They said he might be able to help. They're very excited that I might soon be able to open my eyes and see. I'm mostly looking forward to being able to close my eyes and have peace. But yes, being able to work to take care of myself, all that would be great. We're in the crowds now. It's like walking through a forest. Rough arms, rough shoulders, rough fabrics like the limbs and bark of trees. It's a lot noisier, though. Trees don't talk. Now there's chaos in my eyes and ears. Then we're there. I try to listen as my friends beg the man to restore my sight. I can't really hear much over the noise, but I nod. The man doesn't answer, just takes my hand and leads me out of the square. Where are we going? The crowd noise lessens as we leave the square, the streets, and then pass out of the village itself. That much I can tell from the wind on the stones, the open feel of the air. It's much more peaceful. He stops. I can hear his breath. I can hear that my friends are holding their breath. It's so quiet, I hear him lick something, and then I feel his fingers in my eyes. I think he licked them first. I don't know what that's about, but the shapes change. They come together. Suddenly my eyes burn and burst with something. I don't know what. It's just like before, but far brighter and more painful. At least the shapes aren't changing anymore. They have edges that don't morph into voids. What do you see? He asks. I don't know. I see, and my friends don't wait. They start cheering and laughing. I see a lot of the shapes around me move and bounce, waving things like, I see these men moving around like trees. That's the best I can do. The chaos around me grows. The noise is intense. I know they're celebrating, but it's all I can do to keep from curling up into a ball and covering my ears. I don't know how to tell them that this isn't exciting. I can see, but it's almost worse than when I couldn't. Now I'm expected to walk around and take care of myself, but I don't even know what I'm looking at. I'm terrified. Is this it? The man doesn't yell. I'm guessing he's the tree that's right in front of me. He's the only one not jumping around. I turn my head toward him, but I still don't know what to look at. I would assume his eyes, but I don't know where they are. I don't know what they would look like. I don't know how to see. The tree in front of me raises limbs toward me. I almost step back, but he catches me gently. Then my eyes are covered again. What is he doing? Is he going to give me back my blindness? I'd almost prefer it at this. Darkness. Not fear or loss. Actual, calm, still, quiet darkness. I can see it. No lights, no shapes, no shifts, no chaos, just peace. Then he takes his hands away, and I open my eyes again. So that's what a person looks like. And a nose, and arms, and legs, and those are eyes. I wonder if they look like mine. Around me is everything I'd never seen before, but the names spring to my mind as I look at them. Grass, stone, sky, clouds. Not just the names, but what they are to the world, to everyone who's ever talked about them, to me. I look back to him. I can't speak, but I can smile. And he smiles back. So that's what a smile looks like.